Undoubtedly. It's not hyperbole. There really, truly is a math crisis. And it's one that if we don't solve soon, we're going to suffer both, I think, in terms of the economy for the nation as a whole, but also in terms of preparing children to take on their jobs in the future, because their competition isn't the kid next to them in school anymore. It's the rest of the kids in the world, and they are much more well-prepared than we are.
How did we get here into this hole?
That's a really good question. That's more a question you ask an historian. I don't know the full answer, but I do know the reason, and that is essentially from the work we did on the third International Math and Science Study in 1995. We learned that basically what we teach our children is so much less demanding, so much less coherent and focused than what is the case for children in much of the rest of the world. And so we simply are not challenging them in the ways that other children are being challenged around the world.
With the high school graduation requirements, how far does that get us along the path of where we need to be?
The new high school standards, together with the K-8 standards that precede them, are really a move in the right direction. I think it's just terrific because Michigan had standards for quite some time that were really woefully inadequate. We analyzed those and we found them to be, you know, just covering everything at every grade without much of any kind of structure or organization, and they weren't very challenging. So what these new standards do is step up to a world-class sort of standard. We here at Michigan State were involved in this, and the K-8 standards, which are necessary to prepare kids to really do the new high school standards, really were world-class. They were set against the world. That's how we developed them. And so they're really challenging and will move us greatly forward in that regard. I mean, the biggest difference on the surface is that in 7th and 8th grade, actually 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, it's mostly about algebra and functions and geometry, which is what it is in the rest of the world. So that's a big move in the right direction. With that kind of ramp up, the high school standards then can really be challenging and move kids to a serious Algebra 2 course. I don't know if you know this, but high school Algebra 2 is really not high school Algebra 2 anymore. It's sort of a watered-down version. It's not much more than what used to be called Algebra 1. So this now really allows and demands more of a real Algebra 2 class, plus another year of mathematics. So yeah, these are really, Michigan has really stepped up with these new standards. And if they're properly implemented, our children will be well prepared for the future.
That gets to a point. I keep hearing about complaints about sort of, for lack of a better term, fake math classes. You know, they're called one thing, but the content isn't really there. You mentioned Algebra 2. Is that a problem in the earlier grades as well?
Oh, yeah. There's actually, I can give you specifically data to this point. In the eighth grade, we did this. This was, again, part of the TIM study. We took a sample of of eighth grade students in the United States, and we found that fully one-third of the children who were taking a course that by the school was labeled Algebra 1, now this is in eighth grade, but one-third of those kids were taking that course labeled so, but actually using books that are arithmetic books. So you know darn well that those were not really Algebra 1 classes. They were just titled that because that's what the zeitgeist is. That's what people should be taking. And so, yeah, this is a serious problem. And we find this in work that I'm doing right now, that these courses that are called, whatever they're called, very often are not what they appear to be. And there's another problem, especially in high school. We've done some analyses that show there are like 50 high school math courses when, in fact, I can't even imagine what they could be. But we do know there are like 10 varieties of algebra designed for different kids. It's terrible what we're doing. It's to parents, I suspect, they think their child is taking algebra. Oh, good. But what they're taking is some variety of algebra, which may not really be algebra at all, but a continuation of basic arithmetic.
Well, that, in the new graduation requirements, the idea that's been put out there is that even kids in, like, career tech, that they can get those skills in non-traditional math classes. How do we make sure that that happens?
I think that's probably singly one of the worst ideas that I've ever heard. I think all that will do is continue to perpetrate a two-tiered system so that children that are, I guess by then they're not children, but the students who then are in these vocational tracks are destined to receive a lesser education. You can't teach a discipline like Algebra 2 in a quote-unquote non-traditional way. You can't teach it as part of another class. It's a formal body of knowledge. And why it's useful is that, in fact, it develops a set of a mindset, a way of approaching problems very analytically, very quantitatively. And you can't acquire that when you do it on a part-time basis. So that's truly a bad idea. I think I've heard that this is one of the ways that people are suggesting you can still meet those requirements, but I think it's just a terrible idea.
So it sounds like you think we're going to need to really like keep close tabs on how this is getting implemented.
Oh, absolutely. Because otherwise the same thing as I described of what happens in eighth grade will again occur. People will invent different courses for this. And again, what bothers me so much about this is that it's the very kids who need the solid, demanding course for their life's, you know, success. They're the ones who will get left behind in this. The bright kids that live in the suburbs, whose parents are pushing hard for their kids, those courses will be the kind that prepare them for college and or the world of work. But these kids will be the ones that, without strong advocates, will simply end up getting lesser education. They will then end up in jobs that are less demanding, more service-oriented. It's terrible. I think it's a huge inequality. I think it's immoral, in fact, that we would allow this kind of disparity among our children. Most other nations of the world don't do this with basic required courses. All kids are expected to be exposed to those courses. Not that they all succeed, but at least they all have a chance.
So what role do the teaching, I mean, we're at one here, what role do the teaching institutions have in this process?
That's a good question. Of course they do. In fact, that's why I always say the work that we've done in the international arena doesn't end up blaming teachers. It points out problems, but it's the system that prepares them, and it's the system that certifies who teaches at what grade levels. And I think now there's more of a serious look at that. I know the state of Michigan is looking at certification requirements and things of that sort. The universities are continuing to look at that. In fact, we're doing a study that's looking at that very thing that we will be releasing shortly that looks at what kinds of preparation are required. What do other countries do in that regard? So I think it's an important issue, and it will be, in the policy sense, very important in the next few years. That teacher education looks seriously at what those kinds of requirements are for people, and the states will have to look very seriously at who they're going to certify with what types of backgrounds.
Taking sort of the broad view, in the time that you've been looking at these issues, how far along are we in getting to where we need to be?
Well, that's a great question, but you need to understand one thing about me. I'm an optimist, so therefore that's how I see the world. But I believe, actually, we're on the right track here in Michigan, and I think the whole country is attuned to the issue, recognizing how important this is. And there's more possibility for change now, I think, than there has been for quite some time. So, to Michigan first specifically, I think that the new standards are moving in the right direction. I think they're solid and they're sound. And I think the issue will be whether we can get the teachers to actually implement the standards the way they were designed. And it's not just the teachers. I mean, we don't have textbooks necessarily that align very well with the standards. So you have all those kind of problems. So it's not easy to get it implemented. But at least we have the standards in place. I think that's a huge step in the right direction. It moves Michigan from where it was to where it could be, more on the forefront of leadership across the country. And for the country as a whole, I think the issue really is that we need a national set of standards. I think it's absolutely fundamentally dumb that we think that 50 states each should define its own standards. that within those states across the country, there's something like 15,000 school districts, that each one of those districts then interpret the state standards, which means in effect they sort of end up with their own. And then you go down to teachers in their own classrooms sort of deciding what they're going to do. Well, all that introduces is a tremendous amount of variability. So two kids don't have the same opportunities, no matter how similar they are in every other dimension. And I think that's just huge inequality. In the era of No Child Left Behind, the Achilles heel to achieving that grand vision, which is the correct vision for a nation, is that we don't give same opportunities because we don't have a common expectation for all kids. And so certain kids, just because they live in a state, one state versus another state, end up with very different opportunities to learn mathematics. And I don't see how that's defensible, either from an economic point of view or from a moral point of view. I think in both cases, we're failing. And we're going to pay the price for this until we address this. And that's where other nations are smarter than we are. That's what they have, is a national set of standards. National sets of standards doesn't mean everybody has to do the same thing on the same day. That's what people use when they want to mock it or sort of put it aside. It really just means that if you're in third grade, these are the 10 things you need to know. How you get there is up to the individual teacher, but that's what you need to know. So sensible, so rational.
And yet, do you see any movement toward that?
Yes. I think there's a lot of talk now, actually, interestingly, both from the political right and from the political left, a sense that this may be what we need to do. And what's appealing about, I think, the argument for national standards, if you get past some of this local control ideology, which is what gets in the way of most of this.
But that's huge.
Well, it's huge. But if you get just past that slightly, you can. There's a couple of arguments that appeal across the political spectrum. The issue of equality, which is more of a issue of the left, is an issue that's embedded in this, as I just made a point on. But if you go to the issues that more people on the right care about, like the economic security, jobs and all of that, they don't want children and welfare and things of that sort. Not that anybody does. But basically, giving all kids a decent, sound education goes a long way towards ensuring better economic stability for the nation, having kids that get less in trouble and in jail and all this other kind of stuff. So it's an issue that should appeal to everybody across the entire political spectrum we have in this country. And so I think more and more people are starting to recognize that, and there's more and more talk about it at the national level. But you're right, the ideology of local school control is one that has to be gone over and passed, and that's the tough one.